Hi, this is Adam Peacock from My Neighbors Are Dead. For the full month of October, My Neighbors Are Dead is going all in on the Friday the 13th series. And the best part is, we're upping our episodes to twice per week as we talk to all kinds of crazy characters from the world of Camp Crystal Lake, played by tons of amazing guests. Two episodes per week, all month long. Join us for My Neighbors Are Dead on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back to another episode of My Neighbors Are Dead. I'm your host, Adam Peacock, and we're all familiar with the big names in horror. Freddy, Jason, the Slide Rock Bolter of Colorado. But who we're not familiar with are the ones just outside the terror, the ones who didn't get to help or tell their tales. And helping me do that this week, is a comedian and the host of the Unsolicited Advice Podcast, Mr. Jake Sprague. How are you, my friend?
I'm so good. Thank you so much for having me, Adam.
Thanks for doing this. I'm nervous because now that the shine's been worn off since I screwed up that intro, I hope that you still want to do this.
I've lost so much respect for you, but I am here and I'm excited, but boy, I mean, in my head, the tables have turned.
I've got some work to do. We all October long, we've been talking about the Friday the 13th series, and today we're going to talk about the 2003 slasher extravaganza, Freddy versus Jason. Jake, why this movie?
Okay. Well, there's a few reasons. First, I got the email to be on your podcast. I was very excited. I must have read this email more than twice. I'm going to say upwards of three times.
Oh, great.
I sit down with my wife and I say, I have to watch Nightmare on Elm Street for this podcast. We proceed to watch Nightmare on Elm Street, the first one, which I actually really enjoyed. I feel like I hadn't fully seen it maybe since I was a kid, thought it was a great time, immediately pulled up my email to email you guys and saw that I'm supposed to watch a Friday the 13th movie. So that was the first thing I did. And then your producer, Ryan, said, hey, maybe keep in with that trend, watch Freddy vs. Jason. And I thought, perfect. So I watched Freddy vs. Jason.
Ryan's good, blending those two worlds together. He really saved the day. God, yeah. Now I feel even worse. You read the email twice, you watched two movies, and I fucked up the intro.
It's this podcast is just a whole lot of screw-ups on my end, on your end. It's a disaster, Adam, but we're going
to
make
nowhere
it through.
To go but up. Did your wife watch both of you?
My wife, I forced her to watch both movies with me. We have a daughter. She's almost two now. So it's like the daughter goes to bed. We finally have our time together. And it was a nice little change to watch a horror movie because I don't watch a ton of horror. A lot of the horror I've seen has been recommendations from friends, like the best horror movies they can think of. So every time I do watch horror, I have a really, really good time watching like The Descent or The Thing, you know, like things that are like really cool classic movies. I don't know if The Descent's classic, but I had a great time watching it.
People love it.
So I don't watch a ton of horror. Nightmare on Elm Street, great. Freddy vs. Jason, not as good, I'll say. Not as good.
What took you out of it? Was it just that huge jump from Nightmare on Elm Street and the 300 subsequent movies to this one?
Yeah, it did feel like there was something lost in between there being all those films to this one. But I feel like the Nightmare on Elm Street had these really cool effects that they did. And you could tell for the time, it was probably really mind-blowing. There's this moment when Freddy is sort of pushing through the wall with his face that is done in Freddy vs. Jason, but you could just tell for the time it was like, whoa, what a cool effect at the time. This practical, is it called a practical effect? Boy, this is why I'm not working in Hollywood. It's like a practical effect where his face is coming through the wall. And then in this one, it's clear that they've gotten to the point in these movies where they are so into their own like campiness of them that they're almost stupid at points.
Sure.
Which I think is a little, I don't know. It's a little not great, but, Nightmare on Elm Street was so good. And then you watch this and you're like, this is a message board of people writing what would happen if Freddy and Jason fought. That's kind of what this is.
That's, I think, a great way to put it.
Yeah.
It's like what the fans did with the new Star Wars.
Yes.
Like, no, we want this to be this way.
Yeah, absolutely. So you get these two classic characters, and it's weird because I don't have a lot of reverence for these films, but you watch the original Nightmare on Elm Street, and I remember the Friday the 13th movies a bit. It's really cool. It's a really cool idea, actually. I know that sounds wild, but it's a cool idea, and it's actually not a bad plot device of how they get the two paired together. Did you get the chance to watch it, Adam?
Yes, I'm with you. I think it was a pretty cool conceit. Like you said, it's a great way to get them together, and it kind of makes sense in the world that they built.
Yeah. Are we allowed to do spoilers, or is everyone
sure,
at the podcast?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sure.
Spoiler, they get together. So the way that these two characters come together is, I guess, everyone has forgotten about Freddy. Freddy only gains power when people are afraid of him and when they know who he is and he can inhabit their dreams. But everyone in this little town where Elm Street is has forgotten about Freddy, and he needs them to remember Freddy. So he convinces Jason, by becoming like a ghost of Jason's mom, to go to Elm Street and start killing people. And once Jason goes to Elm Street and starts killing people, they naturally start going, oh, wow, Freddy's back. So Freddy can gain his powers. And I thought, wow, that's actually a really cool way for these two characters to work together. And then, of course, eventually Freddy's like, hey, I'm supposed to be the one killing people here. Can you please leave, Jason? And Jason's like, no, I like killing people as well. So they have to fight.
It's a great way to get him together. And the thing that really turns it all south is that he's jealous.
Yeah.
It's all just jealousy.
Yeah. I actually, of course, the two are mostly evenly matched, and they have to kind of get to that place. You know, it's like Superman versus Batman, Freddy versus Jason, Alien versus Predator. You can't have one side clearly win, so they're pretty evenly matched. Yeah. But I did really like that Freddy was very much Freddy. He was just kind of this petty, like, jerk, and Jason was very much Jason. He was like, no, my whole thing is I kill people who drink and have sex. So Freddy couldn't handle it, and Freddy did what Freddy does and got upset about it. In the dream world, Freddy was really, really powerful, but then when he came into the real world, Jason was kind of kicking his ass for a while. So it was cool that they allowed that, because I think most of the time, people have to be so evenly matched that it's just boring, you know?
Did you waste a lot of time like I did when you were a kid doing these team-ups before they came out, like Freddy versus Jason or Batman versus Superman? Did you have like your heroes or your favorite characters?
Oh my God.
Exist in a world together?
Of course. And yeah. I even remember getting into kind of a screaming match with my friend Mike, because we were talking about who would win, Batman or Superman, and he couldn't let it go that Batman would win, and I knew Superman would win, and it really became a point of contention in our relationship, where I remember screaming at him, I'm like, you're such a condescending dick when it comes to Batman. So, yeah, I've been there.
I got into a pretty good argument with my friend Tim Bricky over at the end of The Dark Knight. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Batman. When Two-Face, when he dies, is he dead? Is he not dead? We got into an argument about whether or not he could come back at the next one and what that would look like.
Tell me, which side were you on? Because I also had an opinion on whether he could come back or not.
I wanted him to come back because I felt like they finally got to him and then they just killed him off. I thought he deserved a little more meat.
Yeah. And I also thought the way we saw him die, I was like, he doesn't have to be dead. He just fell. People fall all the time.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to be dead from that. So I'm with you, Adam. I also thought he could totally be back. We could see a Two-Face movie. And I could be wrong here. This could just be something I'm making up. But I feel like I heard that was something they were kicking around for the sequel, was Two-Face.
Oh, really?
But I could be lying and just trying to support my own theory.
I love it. Because being someone who subscribes to your theory, I support that as well too. I'd heard all the Joker stuff that they were going to do a whole other movie, just him.
Yeah. Oh, that's what it was. I heard that it was kind of like Joker's gang versus Two-Face's gang was the next movie.
Oh, that would have been great.
That's what I had heard. But of course, you know, what happened. So
extenuating.
Couldn't get Aaron Eckhart. So what are you going to do?
He got too big, man.
He's just too big for that franchise.
Your wife, what was your wife's opinion on this? Did she like this movie or did she hate this movie? What were her thoughts?
I don't think either of us hated it because it was just so non-offensive and dumb. It's just dumb. It's just a dumb movie. It's hard to hate it because they kind of made the movie they were trying to make. And clearly, as you said, like the franchises have clearly got to the point where they're like, yeah, we get it. It's dumb. It's definitely, it's a very different feel, of course, from these original movies where they were really trying to make them scary. And now they're just kind of like, you get it. You see some boobs and this guy has a claw for a hand. So neither of us hated it because there's nothing hateable about it. It's just, it's unfortunately kind of forgettable. And I think it would be nice to see this really done right because I do think they had elements in it. Like I said, the way they get together, I think it's super, super smart. This movie also, and I don't know if you felt like this, it told you the plot of the movie so many times. I was blown away by how many times a character would be like, well, we talked about Freddy. So now we remember Freddy. It means Freddy's getting his power again. But I don't know if Jason's going to like that. Like they would literally say happening so much.
Yeah. I almost, there's like a preface that I think Robert Englund as Freddy gives in the beginning that I'm remembering this wrong, but basically just lays out what he's about to do.
Dude, yes. And in a way, I remember my wife saying that she was kind of thankful because she's like, oh, I don't know much about Friday the 13th because they go through that sort of story of Jason. And, you know, there's been a ton of Nightmare on Elm Street movies, so maybe there's stuff we don't know. It was kind of a nice entry point into both of these characters, actually, even though it's a little heavy-handed the way they had to do it. Like, he's basically just talking to camera, like, letting you know how this goes. We didn't hate it. Yes, yeah. Then there was Nightmare on Elm Street 5. So what I did in that one...
right.
It was, yes, quite heavy-handed, but also, I get it. They're trying to make a blockbuster movie, and they're hoping, you know, that some people are just going to go to it who hadn't seen
this
either
one.
Maybe.
This one got to the point that I like when, you know, it seems like a lot of horror franchises get to, like, Busta Rhymes shows up in a Halloween movie. Willa Ford's in the Friday the 13th remake. This one has Kelly Rowland of Destiny's Child in it.
Yes, Kelly Rowland. And honestly, a big character. And she's around for essentially the entire movie.
She's huge.
Yeah, she's really, she's really important in the movie. So I thought that was really interesting because they always do that. They always pull in some star. Where you're like, I don't know. I don't know if this is the time to get B.O.B. in there, but I guess he's in the movie. But yeah, she was, you know, it's weird. And tell me where you're at with this, Adam. I kind of feel like movies like this, they almost need some actors that are not that good. Have you watched Cobra Kai?
You know what? I've only seen the first episode when it was when they were giving it for free.
Okay, so Cobra Kai is out on Netflix now, and I own stock in Netflix, so I'm not trying to get people to sign up, but I feel like legally I have to say that. But Cobra Kai is on Netflix, and some of the actors are pretty good, and some of them are quite bad, almost like B-movie style bad, but it feels like it fits. And I think in some of these horror movies, you can't have someone in Freddy vs. Jason who is just a phenomenal actor. It doesn't really make sense for the film. So I think it's kind of good that they have people like this. They're not bad, but they don't blow you out. They're not blowing your mind with any of their acting choices.
God, but hearing you say that, Jake, makes me, if I ever get a chance, I really want to make a horror movie with like Daniel Day-Lewis and Meryl Streep.
I mean, they would both be good. Meryl is maybe too likable to be in a horror movie because if anything bad happened to her, I'd lose it. But Daniel Day-Lewis, he can be anybody. And I'll let bad things happen to him. I'll say it. Bad things can happen to Daniel Day-Lewis in a movie.
He'll be fine.
Yeah, he really will.
He'll be fine. And I mean, just because I love John Ritter so much, it warms my heart to see Jason Ritter in this movie too.
Yeah, that was really cool. It was one of those moments where I'm watching him the whole time and I'm like, who is this? I know this person. Who is it? And it's nice because now we have the internet. Just got it put in. And
oh, you're going to love it, man.
Yeah, it's been so cool. So we were able to look it up and go, oh, yeah, that's, of course I know who that is. He's been in a lot of things. I think he was in Parenthood that I watched a lot of. So I was like, how did I not recognize Jason Ritter? But
I think that's Dax Shepard's show too, right? Isn't Dax Shepard on
Dax that? Shepard's in Parenthood. Yeah. That one guy that I love that I can't remember his name. Where's that internet? But yeah, it's a very fun show. Everyone cries every episode and it's way too much. So.
I feel like I have some weird connection to Dax Shepard and Kristen Bell because they're both from Michigan.
Oh.
And I went to go see this, like a fundraising show for The Good Place, and she was there. And I didn't go talk to her because I'm not going to go fucking, what am I going to do? You know, but I was like, maybe she'll just know that I'm from there and she'll just come over and start talking to me. She didn't.
Oh, well, I mean, you could only hope that she would sort of feel that, you know, in the air.
Jake, what am I going to say? Big 6'4 dummy standing in the corner.
I've thought that before. This is an slightly off topic, but a little bit with saying hi to people. I saw, I don't know if you know the comedian, you can hear my daughter in the background saying, whoa. I saw the comedian Patrice O'Neill.
Yes.
A few months before he passed away, and was outside of his show. It was like such a wild, he's a wild stand-up comedian. I mean, half the room loved him, half the room hated him. And he was standing outside of his show. I was with my friend Jim, and I remember both of us going, should we go up to him and tell him how much we liked the show and like what we thought of it? And then we're like, no, I don't want to bother him. And
just saw her run by. That's adorable. Yeah,
my daughter's running by in the background. I thought, no, I don't want to bother him, so we'll let him go. And then a few months later, he died. And ever since then, I thought, you know what? If I see someone, I'm not going to bother them, but if I really like them, I'm at least going to go, hey, I think you're great. I think what you're doing is great.
I saw Bill Moseley, who's a very famous horror actor, at a Vaughn's or at a Ralph's. And it was my first Hollywood starstruck moment. And I think I've said it on here before, but same thing like you were just saying, Jake. I was like, I'm never going to see him again. I'm never going to get a chance to run into him again. And he was out grocery shopping and he was by himself. I saw him get off the phone. And I did exactly kind of what you said. I walked up and I just said, I'm a really big fan of you. And I just think you're really great. And then he took the initiative to talk to me about fruit. And I was like, oh, well, this is great.
So yeah,
I think if you see somebody, like, you don't have to, you know, hassle them. Just go tell them you like them.
Yeah. I mean, I get where you don't want to, especially like, you know, someone's eating dinner, they're with their family, they're doing whatever. You don't want to bother them. But if anyone ever wanted to come up to me to tell me that they really liked me, Adam, it would be a treat. I'm sure of it.
Well, I think we've salvaged this episode and our careers from how bad I fucked it up from the beginning. So I think maybe we could be in a spot where that could happen.
Oh, sorry. One second. My headphones. Can you hear me?
I can.
Ugh. They are ruining my life. I don't know why they were not doing this for anything else, but hopefully this is better.
It's great.
I'm sorry. I apologize for 10 years.
No, don't you dare apologize.
Okay, well, I won't. Never mind. I take a break.
Jake, this actually kind of worked out great because we do have to take a break. Dr. King from the Weston Hills Psychiatric Hospital is here. He's going to come talk to us. But hopefully, you know, you get those headphones settled up and then you can talk to Dr. King.
Adam, I knew that I was going to screw up this podcast and I did. So hopefully Dr. King can fix this.
You and I are in the same boat together, my friend. Jake Sprague, thank you so much for coming by.
Bye.
Hey neighbors, Adam and Nate here to talk to you about Patreon. Now, this podcast is possible due to our Patreon patrons, and you can become one by going to patreon.com/mynaborsaredead.
Supporting the show on Patreon's easy. You pay what you can, and in return, you get My Neighbors Are Dead merch, behind-the-scenes info on how we make the show, a shout-out on future episodes, and more.
You may be wondering what we use this money for. Well, we use it for things like production costs, website hosting, traveling for the show, and our monthly meds. We are both severely medicated.
Sad but true. Now, podcasting isn't cheap, and we appreciate any help you can give. If you'd like to see how you can help out the show, go to patreon.com/mynaborsaredead.
Thanks for listening, and now back to the show. Well, great. Well, thank you so much for coming by and doing this. I greatly appreciate it.
Of course. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
I know you have a lot on your plate, so I'm going to get right to it. Let me introduce from the Weston Hills Psychiatric Hospital. I'm talking to Dr. King. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. I'm happy to be here. You know, it's a strange time dealing with mental health.
Sure.
But I'm happy to be on a platform where we can discuss these kinds of things.
Absolutely. And I can't wait to sort of get a little bit of your perspective on mental health and where you think the field's going. But I would be remiss if I didn't ask, what drew you into the field of mental health as being a doctor?
Well, you know, as with most doctors, my father was a doctor. So you sort of follow in those footsteps. And, you know, I come from a small town. The state is sort of nebulous. I'll say that it's unclear exactly where it is, but it's, you know, it's like New Jersey, but it's not New Jersey. That's what it feels like, you know, where I'm at.
Gotcha.
And, you grow up and you start to see a lot of people with some very serious emotional problems. Mm-hmm. And you take that moment in your life where you think, I can either be one of the people who helps or I can be one of the people who hurts. And I wanted to be one of the people who helps.
I think that's great. That's so noble.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Were you, and if this is too personal, please don't feel like you have to answer in at all or in any great detail, but you yourself being a mental health professional, have you had struggles with mental health yourself?
You know, I thought I did have struggles with mental health, but I realized as many of my patients, it's not that I was struggling with mental health. It's that a sort of specter-like figure was attacking me in my dreams. And that's one of the biggest challenges we have at our facility is we have a lot of patients with some serious problems that we want to help. And we also have a lot of patients who are being haunted by a demon in the night. So we really have to figure out how do we help each person effectively.
What's the percentages on people with just a straight up a mental health issue and somebody who's being haunted by a ghostly specter in the middle of the night? What's the percentages there for your patients?
Well, I'll tell you this. At times it feels like 100% of the patients are dealing with some sort of night demon that attacks them. It feels like that, but here's what happens, okay? Once people start finding out that a good excuse for things is that a demon attacks them in their dreams, all of a sudden, everyone's being attacked by a demon in their dreams. So right. I've got to sort out who has borderline personality disorder, something we can really help, and the people who are actively being tracked by a monster.
It's sad because, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not a medical doctor, but it sort of seems like what has been described to me as drug-seeking behavior. You know, oh, this guy does it, so I'm going to do it too, and hopefully I'll get the same benefits as the guy who's actually being terrorized by a night demon.
Yeah, it very much feels like that. It's one person's terrorized by a night demon. Now all of us had the same dream. Oh, really? Everyone dealt with it. He turned into a giant spider for everybody? And you have to start trying to figure that out. And it gets tricky because I will freely admit that for a while I was, I guess, followed into my sleep by this ghoulish man, and he continued to do it for years and years until we figured out a way to sort of get him out of my brain.
So I mean, we can put a name to the pain, I guess, and say that we're pretty confident in saying this is one Freddy Krueger who's been doing this to your patients, right?
That is correct. It appears to be Freddy Krueger. It's unlikely that it's anyone else. And when someone starts saying it is someone else, that's when we go, we don't have any evidence that there's sort of another monstrous man that haunts dreams. So I think you might be lying. And then,
it's like when people say they're crazy, but they're not really crazy, because if you're really crazy, you don't know that you're crazy.
That's a great way to look at it. Yeah. We've had a lot of patients who have come in and use the insanity defense in a courtroom. Mm-hmm. And then they get in and then they say they see Freddy. And then they say there's werewolves. There's this, there's that. And we go, no, there isn't. We know there aren't werewolves. What we are sure of is Freddy Krueger was burnt up by a bunch of townspeople because he was a sick weirdo. And because he was killed in such a dramatic fashion, he ended up haunting children's dreams. We know this. This is fact. We also know that there is a man who lives in a lake who comes out every so often. He's unkillable and he murders teenagers. These are true things. We know this, Adam.
Right.
What we don't have proof of vampires. We don't have proof of werewolves. We don't have proof of the alt-right. These are things that we don't know if they exist. Okay? We just simply know about Freddy Krueger and Jason. These are things that are real. And these are things that we can attempt to treat. I can't treat a werewolf. I can't do it.
Well, I mean, yeah, you're already, you can't battle somebody's fictitious, you know, personification of a mental problem.
Yes.
I'm curious though, you know, you're a medical doctor, and you're trained in psychiatric care. Was this ever something you thought you would have to deal with when you were in school? You know, nightmare ghouls or guys who live in lakes coming to kill your patients?
You know, it's funny that you asked that because when I was in school, me and a few of our friends, we took a trip up to this lake house. You know, it was just like we needed to get out of town. Like exams had just finished and it was like a time for everyone to unwind. I was a virgin at the time and I thought, hey, this could be my weekend. You know, this is big for me.
Yeah.
Everyone starts getting there and, you know, the jock is hooking up with everyone and the hot, beautiful blonde girl, you know, there's debauchery going on and it's really, really exciting. And I'll admit a little paralyzing because this is all sort of new for me. And then we get attacked by a figure. I immediately, and this is why I don't like jumping to conclusions, I immediately say, this is a dream. Freddy Krueger is haunting me once again. But it wasn't the case, Adam. I was wrong. It was Jason. Jason Voorhees was there, and as you know, he was trying to murder all of us for our sins. So I actually, as I was going through medical school, I did realize that this is probably something I was going to be dealing with.
Dr. King, again, forgive my straightforwardness with this, but what did you find more difficult? Was it, in this particular trip, was it the fact that a guy who lived in a lake was trying to murder you, or a fact that this jock was presumably hooking up with the girl that you had a crush on?
That's funny that you ask that, because when we study the brain, we find out that the same sensations, for instance, an entitled 16-year-old would have to not getting the car they want on their birthday is the same feeling as Jason Voorhees stalking you through the woods. We know this when we study the brain. This is something that we can see. So I would be lying if I said I was more afraid of Jason. I was more afraid of social embarrassment, as maybe all of us are.
I think, does that ever really go away? I don't know that it does.
We want to develop medications that get it to go away. We want to do this. But I don't know if we'll ever get there. Maybe it's just part of being the human condition that we have to deal with the fact that socially, the wrong guy getting the girl is just as bad as that monster killing your friends.
I think it's a tough spot to be in too, because I mean, I don't know that I don't agree with you. I think that is probably just as bad. At least with the guy trying to kill you, you have some sort of way to navigate the situation. When a bully's taking your girl, you're helpless.
That is such a great point, because when Jason is stalking you, but you're coming up to the lake and you think, if I can just get to that oar, I can knock him in the lake and then I can hopefully get around him or do something. But when it comes to Trey and Michelle and they're going crazy for each other, what is little Richard King going to do in that moment? I mean,
I'm with you.
Yeah. Oh, my SAT scores were great. Well, we're all at the same college, Richie. So I don't know what to do at this point.
Yeah, and I'm guessing Trey's got to be, what, 6'8", 7'2"? Like, he's got to be just a specimen of a guy.
He's over 7'3". I don't know if they've ever fully nailed it down, because he's one of those, you know, you put a measuring tape near this guy and he's smacking it out of your hands. That's the kind of guy he is. Whatever you've got in your hands, if you're walking by him, he's knocking it out of your hands.
And at some point, wouldn't you think you're just too old for this type of behavior, Trey?
Oh, you'd think so. You would think so, but this is the kind of guy who, I mean, you could be holding your cell phone and your keys and you're near a pool and he's getting ready to smack your hands and it's going to fly in there.
Where is the rest of the medical community in regards to this area of study for the brain? Is it frowned upon? Is it embraced by the medical community? Where is the rest of the world at with this?
Well, it's gotten so politicized, you know, at this point, we basically have people who can't recognize that science is real. That's where we are, Adam. And you know this as well as I do. You will show them the data. You know, we have been able to essentially record people's dreams with a dream machine. They can see the footage. They can see that Freddy is there. They can see that his arms get longer and longer. Yeah. Almost, without question, inhumanly long, but longer than any arms you've ever seen. Yeah. Okay? And he has claws at the end of them. And they will still come back to me and they will say, well, the science is out on this. We don't know exactly what this means. This is, you know, this is pseudoscience. You're developing medications to stop people's brains from working. And I just get to a point where I go home and I sometimes let out a single tear, which is much as I can muster. And I let out one tear and I think, is this really where we are, where we can't even agree on simple facts?
What then does keep you going? Because, you know, if I can understand, if you were to say, I'm packing it all in tomorrow, I'm going to move to Vermont and I'm going to be a candle maker. I could see if that thought crossed your head. So what keeps you going after that tear comes out?
You know, part of it is knowing that there are people that can't help themselves and sure, I have to help them. And another part of it is knowing that if I don't help them, the monsters will come back and kill everyone, including me. So there's that too. I'm not going to lie. There's a self-interest there. Okay. At some point I have to recognize that if I can't get people to stop thinking about Freddy might enter my dreams and kill me. It's a little self-preservation as well.
But really, isn't that what being a doctor is? You're trying to help the world while also helping yourself.
Yeah. I think so. And I'm not going to lie, the paycheck isn't bad.
I can only imagine.
Yeah.
You got to be clearing what, six figures, seven figures?
Oh, I mean, some years I'm doing pretty well if I'm really getting to that cusp of seven. I've never cleared seven, but really getting close, you know?
I think your year's coming up. I think if this thing takes off and, you know, it's embraced by the rest of the community and the world at large, I think, you know, you're going to be on the same pedestal as Alexander Fleming.
Wow. I mean, that's high praise. And I would, for me, my dream, which I don't have anymore because of the pills I take, obviously, because if I dream, I die. But my dream, sort of in that more like fantasy, like, oh, what do I picture my life as? I'm rich. I'm successful. Freddie and Jason are gone. And I can finally take a nap without taking a big handful of medicine. That's my dream.
I think it's such a noble goal and such a noble dream that not only for yourself, but for the rest of the world, because, you know, these two guys just won't seem to go away.
No. And that's something that we found is Jason is sort of an unkillable beast. And I'm not going to lie. I'm not as concerned with Jason as I am with Freddie, because look, no one wants a loud party near their house at night. So I'm not saying I want Jason to come by, but I'm saying I like that Jason exists, because maybe people go, let's only have a few friends over. Let's make it more of a kickback than a full-blown party. But Freddie, on the other hand, is something I'd really like to stomp out somehow. And I think the only way to do it is for everyone in the world to agree that we can't have dreams anymore. We implant something in your brain that takes that part of our mind away from us, and then we take Freddy's power away.
I think you're really onto something. I'm curious, do you miss dreaming? And if so, what's the one thing you miss most about it?
You know, it's crazy to say this, but I used to have this dream where I was falling. And I couldn't grab onto a ledge. And it was terrifying. And then, of course, I had the Freddy dreams. And I thought, well, that's actually terrifying. Give me the falling dreams, you know? Give me my teeth falling out, please.
Right. I mean, that's a welcome to escape from this.
Yeah. So I miss that a little bit. That's what I miss. It's crazy to say I miss the nightmares. But I miss the good old regular nightmares that I could have.
Like maybe orcs or killing your grandmother or something like that.
Oh, sure. Lots of family members being murdered by crazy things. But I knew it wasn't real, Adam. I would wake up in a cold sweat and I would think, oh, that's just my mind preparing me for possibilities. Or I mean, we really don't know what dreams are except for a playground for demons to murder us.
It's so sad, too, because, you know, even when you're a kid, you're told, follow your dreams. If you can dream it, you can achieve it. And I don't think I would say less than 3% of those kids are dreaming about being murdered.
Oh, if even that, if even. I've never been in a classroom full of young children asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? And they say, killed by a sick weirdo who captured children and had to be burnt alive. No one's ever said it.
I think that's probably going to continue.
I think
you
so
keep
too.
Asking kids. I think that answer will probably never come up.
Honestly, if it did, it would just be some smart aleck.
Just some punk kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know who it's probably going to be? The next Trey.
He was so funny. And it was so frustrating because, you know, he had that mean sense of humor. But I'd be lying if I didn't say the guy was hilarious.
Isn't that, there's the double-edged sword of that guy, right?
You want to hate him, but you can't hate him. Also, because to be fair to Trey, he really was the one who kind of stopped Jason that weekend. So, you know,
and the whole damn town's going to think he's a hero now.
Well, I mean, when you die stopping Jason and, you know, everybody's like, oh, it's incredible, blah, blah, blah. And then the doctors magically resuscitate him. Oh, Trey's back. Hooray. You know, it's hard to be a young Richard King in that moment, you know?
I think what you do is so incredible. It's so admirable what you've done with not only just your personal career, but with the field of medicine and mental health overall. Do you have any advice for little young Richie Kings out there who might be dealing with their own trays and are experiencing something similar to what you're going through? Do you have any advice for those little boys and girls who might want to grow up and do what you do?
I will say, there are people who run towards the problem and people who run away. And you want to be one of the people who runs toward the problem. That's the only way that you'll overcome some of these things. And as far as dealing with someone like Trey, I find that it's best to just find the coolest person in the room and stand next to him. Because you're not going to beat that guy. You can't be more charismatic. We can't develop a pill to give you charisma. Trust me, we've tried.
Well, Dr. King, I am on pins and needles to see where this study is going to lead. And hopefully within 5 years, none of us are having dreams.
Oh, that's the dream.
Well, Dr. King, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to My Neighbors Are Dead. I've been your host, Adam Peacock. The show is produced by myself with Nate DeFort and edited by Nate DeFort. Original music was done by Jesse Case, along with Dane Halverson, and our original artwork was done by Mark Nishan. I want to give a big thank you to Jake Sprague for coming by and playing Dr. King. Again, you can catch Jake as the host of the Unsolicited Advice podcast wherever you get your podcasts. If you like the show and you want to support us, please like and subscribe. And if you'd like to donate to the show, you can find us on patreon.com at My Neighbors Are Dead. Follow us on Instagram at My Neighbors Are Dead and on Twitter at My Dead Neighbors. Again, thank you so much for listening to the show, and we'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Michelle Varey.
And I'm Kimberly Truong, and we are the host of Crush Fictionally, a podcast all about your favorite fictional characters from movies, TV shows, and more.
Each episode, we pick a theme, curate a list of characters that we love, why we love them, and some fun facts about the people who created them.
So if you've ever felt a true connection with a fictional character,
tune in to Crush Fictionally on Campfire Media
or wherever you find your podcast.
Campfire.